talk a little Red Sox baseball. To do that, we turn to our friend Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Hello there, Sean.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Not so good in my Red Sox heart of hearts to watch what's been a very curious offseason. I was going to ask what the plan is. Let me instead ask, is there a plan?
Well, if it is, they're keeping it carefully hidden, or at least away from any logical path here. Obviously, Bogarts is gone, and now the focus shifts to Devers. And once again, they're saying all the right things. And once again, I think the majority of Red Sox fans are taking it with a proverbial grain of salt, because let's face it, the track record is not good here of late when it comes to retaining their own stars. It was Mookie Betts first, now it's Xander Bogarts, and Red Sox fans are understandably wondering if Rafael Devers is going to constitute strike three. That's going to occupy a lot of attention over the next few months. And then there's the not insignificant bit of filling some roster holes for 2023. So a lot of work still to be done, obviously.
Sean, does ownership just not understand, or do they not care that it seems like the game has changed in the last couple of years, and that the coin of the realm for big-time players is these decade or more long contracts? They seem unwilling to commit to that.
Yeah, they have as of late anyway. And look, I think even the people that have signed those deals in recent weeks and months, whether you're talking about either of the Carlos Correa deals of the last few days, or Trey Turner, or Xander Bogarts in San Diego, all of those executives and owners would, in a private moment, acknowledge that this perhaps is not the best way to do business, that at the tail end of those deals, you're not going to get a great return on your investment. The players are going to age out. You're going to pay a lot of money toward the end and not get a lot in return. But when that is, as you noted correctly, Rich, when that is the new coin of the realm, when that is what every big-name free agent now expects to get, and you have some philosophical opposition to that, that's a pretty hard sell in this market, because this is not Kansas City or Milwaukee or Pittsburgh or any of those places. This is a top 10 market. This is a top 5 market in terms of revenue. It is a top, perhaps the top, when it comes to cost of tickets. And it's a hard thing to square that you produce all this revenue, that you charge all this money, that there is great interest in your franchise, and yet you show no willingness or indication that you're going to pay the market rate to either, never mind acquire the best players, but in this case retain them even when they start here.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Well, let's talk about the guys they have brought in so far. I like the Justin Turner move, getting a veteran guy. And from what you wrote about yesterday, Boston Sports Journal, a guy who's going to be great in the clubhouse as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a significant part of this move here. I think they wanted a DH who was going to be able to contribute a little bit defensively, whether that be third base or first base, or first base, but Turner can do both of those things. Last year, as we know, J.D. Martinez did not play a single inning in the field, and I think they wanted to have somebody that could show some versatility, not only to get some value out of playing him at a position, but also giving the players who are everyday position players a chance maybe to DH and get off their feet for a day or two. So I think you'll see Devers, there'll be games certainly where Turner is starting third baseman and Devers is DHing. And I think that's a good thing, because it's, you know, the one of the things we've learned about the game in recent years is that it's probably not a good idea to be Cal Ripken and play 162 games and kind of wear down. So the opportunity to do that, and as you mentioned, I think the leadership aspect is big here, because having lost Xander Bogaerts, who was very much a leader, even though not a rah-rah outspoken guy, but certainly a guy that had everyone's attention, could relate to everyone in that clubhouse, he's gone. Martinez wasn't so much a leader as much as maybe he was kind of a hitting savant. I don't know that he was necessarily a guy that that players would turn to when things aren't going well as a team, but he had a deep interest in hitting and mechanics. He was always reviewing video. He was always offering to help younger players with something that he detected with their swing, or a change in their approach, or something about their leg kick or stance or hands, or he had a lot of attention to detail, and he was not afraid to show that. So in Turner, you kind of get both of those things. You get a guy who has a reputation for winning. That's important. He's been to the postseason 9 years in a row. I'd say that streak could be in some jeopardy coming up, but we'll see how that unfolds. But he also is a guy that is looked up to for all he's gone through in his career. And he's also a guy, maybe not quite the obsessive when it comes to hitting that Martinez was, but a student of it and a guy who likes to help others.
Last year, the outfield was not productive at all. Very little power. Not a lot of production across the board out there, and they've certainly addressed that by bringing in Masataka Yoshida. Not a power guy, but can solve some problems, and especially, as you pointed out in a piece last week, the problems they've had in the leadoff spot in the last few seasons.
Yeah, and if not the leadoff spot per se, Rich, then certainly the top part of the order. And that's another thing that Turner brings, to go back for a minute. I think it's worth noting that the two position players or hitters that they have spent the most amount of money on this year are guys who are going to grind out at bats, who are going to put the ball in play, who have good knowledge of the strike zone, aren't going to strike out a lot, will walk. That applies to Turner, certainly, who's got like a 360-something OPS for his career. And certainly it applies to Yoshida, who had like a 440 on base percentage in Japan last year, and that rather remarkable walk to strikeout ratio, where he actually walked almost exactly twice as much as he struck out. In baseball, you're happy if that ratio is reversed, where you're walking half as much as you strike out. He was the other way around. I'm not sure that's going to hold up in the U.S. and in Major League Baseball, but he certainly gets on base. So those, I think that was an issue with the offense last year, where they would chase, where they would be a little too aggressive, where they weren't getting on base, they weren't walking, they weren't getting that on base figure up at the top of the lineup. And now you've added two guys who have, as a big part of their offensive profile, the ability to get on base.
Certainly have improved the bullpen, too, with Rodriguez, Chris Martin, Kenley Jansen, and you factor in the good work they got late in the season out of Matt Barnes. There's some reason to be optimistic if they can get to the sixth inning.
Yeah, I agree. I think the bullpen has improved markedly. I think that just having a guy who has closing experience, and that's an understatement with Kenley Jansen, with, I think, nearly 400 career saves, to have some structure at the back end of that bullpen, which they have not had in recent years. You have to go back, really, to 18 and Craig Kimbrell. That did not end well, necessarily, in October for him. He was pretty shaky and down the stretch, but he was a guy over the course of his career that you knew was going to get the ball when they were up by one, two, or three runs in the ninth inning. And I think, for as many adjustments as we've seen in the game and changes, I think teams still appreciate having that lockdown guy and knowing that 9 times out of 10, when you're up, this is the guy who's going to get the final three outs, and then you work backward from there in setting up the structure of your bullpen. Now, I don't know if Martin's going to be the dominant eighth-inning guy, if Schreiber is going to, if Barnes, in all likelihood, they'll all get looks in that inning. But you can now work some matchups backward from the ninth and know that that inning is covered. And a guy like Martin, who seems to kind of be a late career bloomer who's really figured some things out, that's a real nice pickup with swing and miss ability and another kind of power right-hand arm to go with Barnes and Schreiber.
Still some holes to fill middle infield. If they choose to move Trevor Story to short, they need a second baseman unless they bring in Kike Hernandez, and then they need another outfielder, plus some starting pitching because there are lots of question marks there. Now, Chaim Bloom has said he believes he can get what the Red Sox need through trades, but there hasn't been a lot of trade action so far. Is there a market out there, and are there some talented players out there that the Red Sox might be able to get for some of that minor league talent?
Yeah, I mean, they do have an improved inventory of prospects, certainly. That's one thing that Bloom has helped here to restock the farm system. I think that safe to assume that there are 3, if not 4, untouchables there. You would certainly put Meyer in that category. You would probably put Casas in that category, and you would probably put Bayo in that category. And then everybody else, I think, is at least in play. The one thing that should perhaps concern them, and you hinted at it, is there has not been a great trade market this year. And I thought Ken Rosenthal had an interesting piece in The Athletic earlier this week where he talked about, kind of questioned, are we seeing the end of that traditional trade where, a big market team trades a bunch of prospects and expects major league talent back? He talked about teams sort of reluctant to engage in those kind of deals, and that maybe you might see some old-fashioned baseball trades of major league talent for major league talent. I think that gets harder for the Red Sox to execute because they don't have an obvious surplus in any area where they could move a player. Like, look at Toronto. They've got 3 catchers that they could move. Everyone expects that they're going to trade one of them and fill a need. The Red Sox really don't have that. They don't have extra shortstops, or if they do, they're not willing to trade the younger ones. And certainly they don't have it off the major league level. So he's kind of in a quandary because it isn't a great trade environment, and yet there's not a lot still out there on the free agent market. What little is out there is kind of that middle of the rotation starter, a guy like Nathan Eovaldi, a guy like Michael Wacha, 2 guys who were there with them last year. He could bring one or both of those back, but still there's the issue of, determining who's going to play short, or, as you noted, if someone on the roster is going to play short, who's going to play second or center. And, it gets hard to imagine how you solve either of those issues on the free agent market, and yet there's not a lot of trade activity. So you got to do one of the two, but we'll see where it goes.
Do you think they're content with the tandem of Wong and McGuire behind the plate?
I don't think content, but given their greater needs, I think they figure that they can make that work. And look, they're not going to, I think, combined, if those are the two that they start with, I don't know that either one of them is going to be anywhere near an all-star level player. McGuire, I thought, hit a lot better than a lot of people anticipated when he came over here at the deadline last year. He throws well. He's still a young guy who bounced around a little bit. This is his 3rd organization. And maybe he's one of those classic catchers who kind of is a late bloomer in his late 20s. I think they can get by with those guys, and given that there are more pressing needs, both in the rotation and certainly at shortstop, they may have to or put that search on hold for a little bit.
Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal, a couple of days left before the holiday. I would think a perfect Christmas gift for the Red Sox fan and your family would be Sean's wonderful book, The Franchise, A Curated History of the Sox. You get that at your local bookseller and make someone awfully happy when that's under their tree this Christmas. Sean, great to talk with you, as always, my friend.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for the plug. If I do say so myself, it is a good last-minute Christmas gift for the sports fan in your life. And as you noted, it's available online and in local bookstores. So thanks for that. Have a great Christmas and Happy New Year and happy holiday for you and your listeners.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you. I hope you get some granddad time in this weekend.
We're counting the days. They're on the way here Monday morning, and we'll be here for 3 or 4 days. So I feel like a kid at Christmas waiting for the kids at Christmas.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, Merry Christmas to you and your family, Sean. We'll talk with you in the new year.
Thanks, Rich. Same to you.
Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal on Downtown.